What's good, y'all? It's that time of the year, and we've got bills to pay. So if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some new merch. If about 10% of you listening right now donate $10 to support the show, we'd have enough to cover an entire year's worth of cost of production. Over the years, I've been very intentional about turning down ads for things that didn't align with our values, so you don't have to listen to us talk about gambling or boner pills or any of that other crap. But that's only possible through the support of you, our listeners. So we've created some new ways for you to support. And again, if you enjoy listening to the show, hit the links in the description to support by donating, joining our Patreon, or buying some of our new merch. And of course, don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you, and we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Now let's get into today's show.
Jordan trying to shake off Starks. Oh, what a move! Oh,
LeBron James with no regard for human life! 12 seconds. Bryant for the win. Bang!
Iverson. Against Gill, the crowd on its feet. Allen for the win!
Welcome to the Sneaker History Podcast.
What's good, y'all? Nick Engvall here. This is going to be an interesting episode. It's kind of a test to see if you all like it, so definitely would appreciate your feedback after you listen to this one. But we do a few different formats of the show, as is, but we also want to try to make sure that we're covering things that are relevant to sneaker enthusiasts, to our community, to our Discord members, and part of that is sneaker history and what's happening and the moments that we want to remember and recall and get a little nostalgic about. And part of that is just testing to see how we can get more people into our community and seeing how we can get more listeners on the podcast or for the podcast, because I think that all will help us grow the podcast and make it better in many ways, just because we need to find some sponsors and we need to find some more interviews to do. So we're always open to feedback. If you're in the Discord, that's the best way to get it to the group of us and let us know what you want to hear from us and what you would like to see. Related to that, I actually started a new YouTube channel called Nick at Sneaker History. You can just find me, Nick at Sneaker History, on YouTube. I've uploaded a handful of videos over there, and really I wanted to document the shoes that I have, the stories that I've been a part of, and the memories that I have with all these sneakers over the years. And this particular episode of the podcast is kind of ripped from the YouTube channel to give you an example of what is there, but also to show some of the community aspect of our Discord. So this is a Q&A session that we did in the Discord, and I responded to all of these questions in my YouTube video. If you want to subscribe to that channel, it would be greatly appreciated. And of course, I appreciate you all for rocking with us all these years. I hope you enjoy this one. If you do, let me know. And in the future episodes where we're experimenting a little bit with the format and the styles, definitely keep in touch with us and let us know what your favorites are and what's going to provide you the best experience as a listener of the show. I appreciate y'all. I hope you enjoy this episode. What's good, y'all? My name's Nick. Worked in the sneaker industry for almost 20 years for companies like StockX, Complex, Eastbay, Foot Locker, Finish Line. You name it, I've probably done some work with them either as a consultant or in a full-time role. But now I'm doing this here YouTube channel. So I have a Discord with the sneaker history community, and the folks in there supplied some questions for me to do my first Q&A on this YouTube channel. So hit subscribe, lock in, and let's talk about sneakers. Okay, Hassan asked, what can core skate shoe companies do to stay competitive? Almost all of them have gone out of business or have been sold now. That's a super tough question because the skate industry as a whole is suffering right now through some serious changes. But I think that there's also going to be a trend where we see those brands come back into style, both in a fashion sense, but also in a just get out there and skate and just go skate and just go be outside of the house. You know, I think a lot of us are tired of being on the internet all the time. I've spoken to many of you guys about this at length over the years where, you know, there's only a few places left that you can go on the internet, our Discord being one of them, where it most of the time feels like a pretty low-key, stress-free place. And that's what skateboarding is for a lot of people. It's the escape from the rest of the world. It's the escape from the 9-to-5. It's really just a break from having to do the life things that allow you to ultimately get back out there and get on the board. So that's a very broad answer. I think on a granular level, skate shoe companies,
need to kind of rethink the way that they go about doing things, because a lot of the designs have been handed back and forth from company to company. A lot of the styles that have been trendy and, you know, broken through to mainstream kind of get forgotten and left behind. So outside of like Nike SB, which I don't really think of Nike SB as a skate brand, and I know, Hassan, you're probably asking about core skate brands. It's really tough because, you know, I'm sure you saw that S was recently acquired by a conglomerate company that, you know, does a lot of outdoor and some skate type stuff, but mostly snow. And you're going to lose the core audience of that brand because people want to support their local skate shops. They want to support their local skaters. And, you know, the other side of that, Lakai is one of my favorite brands. Telford, this is a Larry June shoe. You know, it's just a local hip hop artist. Larry June, being from San Francisco, makes sense to do a collab with Lakai, you know, as a brand from San Francisco. But even this version of Lakai, whenever this was, 2016, 17, 18, I don't remember when that shoe came out, sorry. You know, that's part of the problem, is that at that point, Lakai had been sold by Mike Carroll and the crew. So it moved under, I think, the Huff brand, which is also under a conglomerate brand, which is, you know, also kind of like Undefeated on the streetwear side. Like, all these companies are really layered in deep. And in order to break free from that, you kind of really have to take a big risk and bet everything on yourself. And that's a tough thing to do for a skate brand that, especially a skate brand where the founders like Lakai or like Diamond Supply or, you know, Huff even, right? Like, the founders are either passed away, moved on, much older, have other business interests. So they've lost their core audience, because I want to see people skating in the shoes, and I want to see the people skating in the shoes making royalties off the shoes. So in order for them to get over that kind of big hurdle of entering into the market, you kind of got to go big. And I think it's not a recent success, but I would say that if you look at like Supra Footwear, when they came into the industry, core skateboarders, the whole messaging was about skateboarding, and skateboarding is cool no matter what. Like, skateboarding is cool for the people that can't skateboard, because it's has a rebellious nature, and it has a very kind of stick it to the man feeling behind it, regardless of what brand it is, what, you know, like it's flipping off the no skateboarding sign and saying, hey, we're going to skate here anyway. And I think that mentality has to be the way skate footwear brands approach this next generation. Otherwise, they're just going to get lost in the sauce the way they have over the last 15 years or so. All right. Gregatron says, would you trade your entire sneaker collection for a lifetime supply of burritos? Greg, man, that question, had you asked me a year plus ago when I had a full-time job, I would have said, nah, I'll keep the sneakers. At this point, still looking for work, I'd probably trade the sneakers for the lifetime supply of burritos. But that's a big ask. As somebody who could literally eat burritos 4 or 5 meals a day, I don't know if any of these hypothetical suppliers are up for the challenge of feeding me burritos 5 times a day, 7 days a week for the rest of my life. I think the term is eat you out of house and home. That's what comes to mind. Let's see. Biotech McGee. Dalton says, what do you think of premium lines like Off the Wall by Vans, Converse, Addict, important to the industry? Do you think Nike would be smart to bring something like that back, like they had with Nike Lab? Yes and no. Right now, being that the economy is pretty rough on a lot of people, the job market's really tough on a lot of people, and there's a lot of change happening, I think that the overall answer to that question is yes. It's always a good idea to have like a more premium offering of some sort where you can potentially stretch outside of your core audience and bring new people in. The reason why is because if you're going to, Off the Wall, for instance, is a great example. If you're going to get people to buy Vans on a regular basis, then creating an Off the Wall line where you collaborate with artists, you know, entertainers, musicians, reaching those audiences through a more premium look and feel will inevitably make them fans of the footwear brand, and then that can be an effect that brings them into becoming more, let's say, like us, where we're dedicated to paying attention to these releases. We're looking for the new stuff. We're always wanting to wear the brand. We're wanting to support our favorite brand. So that part of it, to me, I think makes a lot of sense. Same with Converse, Converse Addict. Converse is really interesting because they struggle to break free from the Chuck Taylors. And even when they do, like, the premium Chuck Taylors, it's usually not as successful as another brand doing a premium offering. But they also can have these massive groundswell type trends where, you know, I think over the last, it might be a little bit dated now, maybe like 3 years ago, all the girls were wearing those really chunky, kind of almost like outdoor soled Chuck Taylors that were like raised up and lifted. And then there was like the girls that were wearing the 3-inch heeled Chuck Taylors. I think those types of things are what appeal to those Converse Addict level collabs. And you could imagine how the tipping point to go from high fashion to, let's say, regular fashion with a Converse Addict or Off the Wall or any of the Nike Lab type stuff, that happens when a brand lives slightly in that higher level space. Higher level, very opinion, not my opinion, but like in a very higher level fashion sense. And especially when times are tough, those things tend to go away. They take a little bit more marketing money to keep them going. But what happens is a lot of people really like downsize on the number of products they're buying, but buy at a little bit higher of a rate, hoping that that product is a better quality and will last them longer. So I think right now is a great time for Nike Lab, for, you know, Converse Addict, for Off the Wall, for any brand to have that like slightly elevated offering. It will definitely be tough for them to do that. And because all of it's driven by, you know, investors and Wall Street numbers, oftentimes this is the kind of stuff that gets tossed out when times are tough and numbers are being crunched. I don't know. So hopefully that's a good answer. If not, let me know. I'll drop this in the weekly events to get some more conversation going for the next one of these. Explosion. Sean says, it seems like a lot of Nike's stable of collaborators has gotten stale. What can they learn from the success of the Cole Sunders? Who would you like to see collabs from? That's an interesting question, because my first reaction is I would like to see people collaborate with other brands. A lot of times when Nike collaborates with a brand, let's say, the brand can't live up to the standard that they've set with Nike. They can't live up to the hype that Nike's able to create on their own. So the best example of this would be a lot of the Japanese brands or the Asian brands that have had exclusive models or exclusive designs. But then where are those brands in their own world now? Is there any interest for, I'm not picking on anybody, but let's say, you know, like once you've collaborated with Nike as acronym, as Jonya Watanabe, as, you know, any of those brands that live in that same hype beast world, you've kind of hit your peak. You almost have to like let go and do something different. If the best way to put this is, those brands that are looking for collaborations with Nike, that get collaborations with Nike, where we see some of these individual collaborators or their personal brands do a dunk. I forget the name of the dunks with the extended swooshes, but like that's a great example. Those shoes are incredible, right? Like they got Nike to really get outside the comfort zone, press further ahead than they ever would have on their own. Yes, from an aesthetic point, they're different and maybe people don't like the look of them, but they're enough to make people rethink the way that shoes can be made, like classic shoes can be made. The downside of those brands doing that is that you can't duplicate that. You can't get that level of commitment from another brand because Nike always has the biggest budgets. Even when budgets are tight, Nike has the biggest budgets. So if We look at Acronym, for instance. Acronym did those Prestos, right? Amazing shoe. Acronym's done tons of collabs, but like, let's look at the Presto specifically. They changed all sorts of stuff about it. They made a mid, they added a bunch of different elements to it, and they were tremendously successful on the first run. The second run, they were still successful, but they ended up, you know, hitting outlets in some places. People got them for good deals, but that made it more accessible, which meant Nike can make a mid acronym or mid non-acronym Presto, which I actually grabbed a pair. They're in storage, but I actually grabbed a pair of the general release mid Prestos because they were just good. Presto's comfortable. The shoe was cool. Had a little bit of a, you know, not quite outdoor material to it, but that is one of the things that I think almost ruins brands, because if Acronym goes to, let's say, Puma, or right now ASICS is hot. ASICS and New Balance are at the top of their game. Hoka and On. If Acronym goes to any of those four companies, they're definitely not going to get the same level of budget as what they got at Nike. So is their ability to be committed to great product higher than taking, you know, is their commitment greater than taking a loss financially? Not necessarily a loss, but taking lower amounts of money to do what they do. That's always a tough position to be put in for any brand or for any creative. Or, I mean, Sean, I know you know that, but like, it's very difficult to take on something that you're not being paid what you deserve or what you've earned in the past, what you feel you earned. And sometimes I think that's like the downfall of a lot of the Nike collaborators, let's say. The other part of it is, if you're a business person that starts a brand and you want to grow the brand and be successful, you have two choices. This is kind of goes back to the skate shoe conversation at the beginning of this. You have two choices. You grow the brand and you ride it out until you eventually are too tired or too old or too whatever to continue it on, and it just kind of fades away. Whether it fades away into some other brand and ends up a part of Ross and Marshall's and Nordstrom Rack shelves, or, you know, just dies a quick sudden death and it disappears. The other option is you sell that brand to a bigger company. A lot of people don't realize, like, the company that I used to work for, Stadium Goods, was owned by a company called Farfetch, which is originally based in Portugal, but a global brand, massive, massive site. Most of you have probably seen it. That company was sold for pennies on the dollar to another conglomerate based out of Korea. So Farfetch and the companies that they were the parent company of, which one of them includes New Guards Group, New Guards owns the rights to like Off-White, Palm Angels, a bunch of other companies that are sneaker adjacent, that ultimately the brand got hot enough, was worth enough to sell to a smaller conglomerate, you know, like a New Guards Group, or even if you think of it as a bigger group, like Farfetch or Coupang, the company that bought them. So the two choices being, you either ride it out. Like, if you ride it out and you own your own skate shop for the rest of your life, so be it. You know, like, you'll be the old dude in the skate shop. You'll be rad as hell until you die. You won't make a ton of money and you won't have a relaxing life because it takes a lot to run a business. The other side of that is you take the payout, you sell the brand or the IP to another company or the rights to creating that brand or whatever, like Virgil did with Off-White. That brand then can be carried on by other people. It loses its momentum over time, obviously, but, you know, you presumably, like, I would be happy for one of my friends to have the opportunity to sell a brand to a bigger company and say, hey, I'm done with this. This part of my life is closing. This chapter's ending, and I'm going to go start something new. We see it all the time. And of course, we're all very opinionated about it because we want our favorite brands to stick around and be authentic and be real. But ultimately, the collaborations that you're talking about with Nike put brands on the map to the point where they have to make that decision, I think, a lot sooner than most people realize. And it's really difficult to move past Nike collaborations and be successful. You can look across at other brands, you know, brands like Neighborhood, brands like Nego and Bape, these brands ultimately come back to Nike to do the collaborations because they are the best. Like, they're at the top, regardless of trends, regardless of all opinions, they are the best in the business at sneakers, at hype, at inspiration, at aspiration, at marketing, all of the above. So there are times when other brands win a little bit more, but ultimately, if I wanted people to succeed long-term in a business, I would want Nike to be years down the road and have the experience of working with smaller brands, work with an independent brand, work with, you know, maybe a Saucony, work with, you know, an Asics, a New Balance, build out your portfolio of product output, but also make it all stepping stones to get to the Nike level, to the point where your brand is as big as it can be before you sit down with Nike and make a collaboration. And that way, when the time comes, you don't have to do the thing that is wearing out a lot of the collaborators right now. Like Ama Manier being a good example, people aren't necessarily excited about those collaborations. They're beautiful shoes and the stories are always pretty solid, but it doesn't feel new and exciting. So where does a brand like Ama Manier go from making, you know, what, a dozen Jordan models in their own colorways? I don't know. All right. Iron Trev said, Rick Owens, go back to a cold wall again, Baudet, and back to Errolson and Acronym. Yeah, I think those brands are, you know, a cold wall doesn't sell well on their collabs with Nike compared to, like, even compared to Errolson and Acronym. But I do think that they are, like, the top-tiered creative partners for Nike at this point. But, again, like, those are brands that design beyond the mainstream, right? Like, if you buy, like, I have a cold wall, I forget, the SFB boots. That shoe is phenomenal, and you guys know I don't wear boots ever. But, like, I had to have that shoe because it just was so cool to see their take on it. But it's also not even close to what Nike would deliver as a boot, right? So I think those brands are interesting. And obviously Rick Owens is a, you know, he's always successful almost everywhere. But yeah, I don't know. It's a that's a good conversation for a community call. Mario Restores says, will there ever be another American-made sneaker magazine like Soul Collector? When is the next sneaker combos? It is needed. Since this is a pretty new channel, if you want to know what Sneaker Combos is, I put on a 3-day event, let's say, festival kind of thing, but all online during the pandemic back in 2021, where I just got people to come on and talk on panels about all the different things that I enjoy that were connected to sneakers. We had a women's panel, we had a fitted hats panel that I'm obviously a fan of. We had, you know, a bunch of YouTubers talking about their creativity. We had people on the resale side, we had people not on the resale side. I thought it was really cool. And we also had as many of the sneaker podcasters on as we possibly could. And, you know, it was super successful for me. Like, I didn't get paid, there was no money involved. And people did, like, donate some for that. But, like, I didn't have any sponsors. I originally wanted to call it South by Sneakers, but then South by Southwest sent me a cease and desist, so that obviously made that part of it hard to market, and I had to change that all within, like, 3 days of the event. So I would love to do another one. I would love to do in-person events like that, and hopefully the trivia night that Mike did in Houston this week, or this earlier this month, and you know, some of those similar trivia night type events that we've got planned will hopefully lead us to that. But I also need to figure out how to actually get paid for it this time around. So if anybody has any ideas on sponsors or has connections that would like to be in front of a sneaker audience, leave me a comment, let me know, or join the Discord and hit me up. I would love to have that conversation. But as far as the magazines go, there's a lot of room for an American print magazine. I would love to be able to bring back Soul Collector. I mean, you know, most of you guys know I have a massive amount of love, respect, and history with Soul Collector. I've got most of the collaborative shoes that they did over the years. That was some of the funnest times in my career, was working for Soul Collector and, you know, just connecting with people that just nerded out about sneakers. So I've kind of tried to build like a small version of that with the sneaker history community. But for me, I don't know. We'll see. I think I'm not going to say I'm going to try it, but I'm not going to say I'm not going to try it at some point in the near future. Drucifer K. Drew says, what is the thing you're most proud of that you helped to create or build and got to put out into the sneaker world? Were you a part of the design process on any shoes? If so, which one was your favorite? Also, was there any shoes that you were a part of that didn't ever come to fruition? What is your favorite shoe that currently exists? What is the perfect shoe for Nick that doesn't exist, but you wish it did? Model, colorway, etc. What's next for Nick? That's a lot of questions. So, what's the thing I'm most proud of? You know, this is a little tough, but my mom passing away recently has reminded me how much the sneaker community cares about me. You guys in the Discord, so many people out there. I recently made a post on Instagram about it. And the outpouring of love and the amount of people that just went out of their way to support when she first got cancer. You know, she didn't have insurance and we just needed to figure out how to pay for the chemo. And, that overall, like the fact that I know that when shit hits the fan, there's literally countless people that will lend me a shoulder to cry on or reach out with, you know, some love and encouragement. And yeah, I mean, that by far is the thing that I'm most proud of. As far as something that I worked on and created for a brand or whatnot, I mean, it's hard to not be proud of StockX. I worked my butt off for that company when it started. I was employee number 9 and did everything, every word you saw on the site. A lot of the creative direction, I worked with Chris Kaufman, who was a co-founder there. You know, like, I feel like I made a huge impact on the sneaker business of StockX. But just on a very personal note, man, building the East Bay blog, you know, the first time that a retailer had like an actual blog where there was, like, I think great content. You know, we were doing sneaker reviews, performance reviews. We were doing, you know, coverage of all sorts of sports because East Bay had such a deep catalog across all sports. I look back really fondly on that time. And I think part of it is just the nostalgia of the East Bay catalogs. They were just such a huge part of all of our lives. And to be able to, you know, with the help of you know, the whole team at Soul Collector, B. Rich, Jordan Hagedorn over at East Bay at the time, the East Bay team, Steve Mulholland and Nick DiPaola at Soul Collector, Steve Giaconetta at Soul Collector. You know, we really got to do something that only a handful of people did. And to be able to bring such a nostalgic piece of sneaker culture into the digital age was really kind of a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. I say that, and then I got to go back to StockX, because when I was at StockX, we actually launched the very first Nike LeBron retros, the Zoom generation, the first colorway of the Zoom generation, with the floor made of the Cavs court, with rings that you might have seen on my Instagram that were, you know, not necessarily player level, but very elevated championship rings for the Cavaliers, and just a whole, I think the story and the connection and being able to, we had Kevin Gandhi on SportsCenter talking about him and unboxing a pair on live SportsCenter. We had coverage in the New York Times. Like, the whole team came together and we really created something super fun, and I think something that did justice to LeBron's legacy. And then having him, you know, obviously on the team and seeing him wear those shoes and being able to launch them at the Cavs court, even that's definitely up there too. So, I mean, honestly, I've been so lucky to work in this business for so long that, I mean, it's crazy, which is why I got to continue making these videos so I can tell more of these stories. Cause I've got even crazier ones from that Zoom generation launch. Were you a part of the design process on any shoes? If so, which one was your favorite? Also, were there any shoes that you were a part of designing that never came to fruition? So, I wouldn't necessarily say that I worked on designs because a lot of that was done by Nick DiPaola. But, you know, I got to be a part of those conversations as those shoes happened. And there's a couple of shoes that... I'm most proud of. Design process, I was a part of the conversations. I never got to do a lot of the design work. That was kind of Nick DiPaola's thing. I got to be in conversation with him at all times and like kind of go back and forth on a lot of designs and saw a lot of the early samples. The one that I think I'm most proud of being a part of is the one that was a Soul Collector team shoe with Brandon Jennings, and it had our initials, our logos, like some Sacramento nods because Nick and I are both from Sacramento, and then the Soul Collector on the bottom. It was just a cool to have your name on a shoe that was limited edition, you know, obviously having the Soul Collector logo on the tongue. And I don't know if you can see that, but there's like a Kings style logo with SC916 for, the area code. And, you know, it was just such a cool experience to be a part of bringing that to life. And it's definitely one of the shoes that I'm most proud of. The missed opportunity that I will say, there's not a lot of info out there on this, and this is probably a whole video, but this shoe, the Nike Zoom Comfort Air Jordan 11, or the Air Jordan Zoom Comfort 11, whatever it is, Air Jordan Comfort 11, Zoom Comfort 11, Soul Collector collab, the carbon fiber, this shoe was... one that we actually presented the designs to Tinker first. Back then, it was a lot different. Like, Tinker wasn't... he was obviously a celebrity among sneakerheads, but he wasn't a celebrity beyond the sneaker world. So he had a close relationship with Steve Mulhall and Nick DiPaola from Soul Collector. We actually went out and got dinner, pizza, and beers one night, and, like, we're talking about this shoe, and... you know, the original idea for the shoe was actually a Air Jordan 11 mid in carbon fiber, and Tinker was on board with it. There are samples out there that have popped up a couple of times since then, but you might not find this information about that shoe because not everybody talked about it. And now that it's been a long time, I feel like I can talk about it, but Tinker essentially said, go ahead, do the carbon fiber Jordan 11 mid, and... the samples look amazing. I know they exist. I know some people have seen them. But it got shut down by higher-ups. And back then, there's only a couple of people that are higher-up. So you can imagine. What is your favorite shoe that currently exists? What is the perfect shoe for Nick that doesn't exist, but you wish it did? Model, colorway, etc. And what's next for Nick? Favorite shoe that currently exists? That's an impossible question to answer. I mean, I just got the black and red playoff ones, the bread ones, the band ones, whatever. Incredible shoe. Like, the quality is super dope. I've got to wear them all the time in order to break them in, and I haven't started that process yet because I have some ideas around some more community-driven stuff over the next couple of months, so I want to be able to wear different shoes. The Black Cement 3 I've been wearing a lot lately just because I have the 2018s or whatever they are. And it's pretty close to a perfect shoe. It's so tough, man. The Puma R698 always comes in that, like, hot lava colorway or infrared colorway or whatever it was. Infrared 90s are always up there for me. The shoe that I wear the most right now, I've kind of been back in an old school phase, so I've been wearing Reebok Classics an awful lot lately. I put some Move insoles in them, and they're just good beater shoes and comfy with the insoles. The perfect shoe that doesn't exist, I'm going to have to work on that and come back to you with an answer, because I'd have to think about that a lot. What's next for me? Honestly, I don't know, man. I'm just trying to keep this Discord going. I'm trying to get this channel going and hopefully find a way to earn a living doing stuff in the sneaker business, because I haven't worked for about a year now, and I'd still love to be a part of this business, this industry, and meet so many of the people like yourself, where I just feel like if we ran into each other on the street, we'd be chopping it up and having dinner. So last question for this time around, what happened to Soul Bar, and was it just too early? So I did not get to work the Soul Bar. I started at Soul Collector after Soul Bar happened, but Soul Bar happened in Los Angeles and was basically a sneaker themed bar restaurant type thing. It was just too early. Yeah, you're spot on. Like, it was way too early. There wasn't enough people that were into shoes to support it. You know, like, people weren't, there were plenty of sneakerheads in LA, but it was taking a lot to get them, and they would have had to be there regularly to support that. I don't think it was planned to be a long-term thing, but I think there was hope for it to be a long-term thing. But right now, I do think something like that, you know, could be very successful. Anything that's themed like that gives people a reason to get out, to go experience it, to be at a retail establishment, to, you could support it with merch, you could have themed meals, beers, drinks, whatever, boba, coffee, all that stuff. So I would love to be a part of something like that. I don't know if I'll ever have the courage to do it on my own, but hey, you never know. If this channel takes off, I will definitely do something like that. We'll incorporate it with Sneaker Combos. Thank you all for the questions. I'm looking forward to doing this. This was actually really fun for me. I appreciate you all for being a part of the Discord and for watching these videos and for supporting me. If you could, smash the like button, subscribe, all those YouTuber things that I'm not comfortable with yet. And I'll catch you in the next video, and I'll see you in the Discord.
Hey, y'all. Nick here. One more thing before you take off. Do us a solid and leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Check the links in the description to help us keep the show going. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And don't forget to tell someone you like their kicks today. You never know how far a compliment will take you. And we all know how good it feels to be on the receiving end of some appreciation. Peace.